Thank you, counsel. You may be seated. We welcome Judge Reedman to the bench in place of Judge Moore. Our third and final case this morning is In Re Matter of Public Service Commission versus Bangart Properties, LLC. Are the parties ready to proceed, counsel? Appellant, yes, appellant, you may approach. It's Mr. Conrad. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Bartel. I'm here to represent Bangart Properties and their pending appeal. The primary issue that's raised by the appellant in this appeal is the excessive nature of the civil penalty that was handed down. I've spent a lot of time in our brief and our reply brief setting forth the reasons why we believe this penalty is excessive. In short, it's greater than the aggregate of all other penalties imposed by the PSC in grain dealer matters, probably for the last 20 years. Our position is that the actions of Bangart do not constitute a risk to the public that would necessitate a fine of that nature. As a little bit of background, Bangart is a small family-run business having a base in South Dakota and Gettysburg. This is not a national corporation. This is not a corporation with billions of dollars. This is a family operation. A $290,000 civil penalty is life-altering and business-altering for my client and is a significant financial setback. In imposing the fine, the PSC failed to consider my client's good faith efforts to achieve compliance and the corrective actions that my client took. The fine, in our opinion, is punitive in nature and not reasonably related to the goals of the PUC. It is our belief, and I think implied within the Grain Dealer Act, that the goal of the PSC as it pertains to Nebraska farmers is that they want to make sure that the farmers are getting paid for their grain, and I think they should also be concerned with promoting competition in the marketplace, thereby achieving higher prices, and higher commodity prices mean more profits for the Nebraska producers. Before I get into the primary case that I rely upon, I think it's important to address the standard of review. The first standard was set earlier on, which was for all PSC determinations, which was an abuse of discretion standard. Then in approximately 2013, the Nebraska revised statute 75-136 was revised to allow this court a de novo review. And that stood for some time, including through the Tellwright case in 2014. However, in the application of Op 0003, which was the Trans-Canada case, the Supreme Court then kind of backed away from that de novo review a little bit and said that even though it's de novo, that there should be an appropriate deference. However, there wasn't much explanation as to what appropriate deference is.
To public interest determinations, right?
Yes, to PSC rulings and appeal matters. And it's our position that appropriate deference should be deference that is appropriate under the circumstances. And our position is that the actions of the PSC were not grounded in the appropriate factors set forth in Tellwright, and therefore I don't believe that there should be any deference granted to their decision, and it should be a true de novo review. Again, as pointed out in our brief, this is not the first time that the PSC has handed down an excessive penalty. The Tellwright case in 2014 is the primary example. In that case, Tellwright revoked an ETC designation for a wireless carrier, which was a significant blow to their business plan. Tellwright was a national corporation having businesses in almost half of the states in the country and had significant financial resources. Tellwright appealed that revocation of their ETC designation, and the Supreme Court found that to be essentially death sentence type action to their goals here in Nebraska, and found that to be excessive. The court relied upon Nebraska Revised Statute 75-156, subsection 5, that basically urged the PSC to go back and look at the gravity of the violation, and the good faith efforts to achieve compliance after notice. And the Tellwright court did not actually go back and opine as to what the appropriate penalty should be as far as a number, but it did strongly suggest to the PSC that they needed to take those two factors to heart. And there are some similarities, I believe a lot of similarities, between the Banghart matter before you and the Tellwright case, again, which was recent. In both of these cases,
You summarize that, I'm going to ask this question, make sure I'm tracking this. I don't really see any real disputes of fact in this case. I mean, there's a number of violations here. There's facts that led up to what happened, and then how your client ultimately addressed the situation once they knew about it. This is just a court ultimately having to weigh those things and determine what the number should be. Is that what we're being asked to do here?
I think that's a fair way of looking at it. There were some disputed things in the record, but primarily my client went into the hearing and admitted the majority of the allegations, accepted responsibility, and even in the briefings, I think we generally agree upon the testimony that was offered. It's how that testimony was received and applied to those two factors that we primarily disagree with. I think
the egregiousness and then the good faith efforts.
Correct.
So where did the PSC miss with regard to that?
Well, I think there were several. I mean, when you read the approximately 22-page order that assesses the penalty, at no point in that 22 pages did they give any real credit to my client for doing anything positive. I mean, I have a list of positive things that they did. It's set forth in our brief and in our reply brief, the fact that it was a first offense, the fact that they're alleging that there's financial risk, even though my clients are appropriately licensed in three other states. The biggest factor is that there was not a single incident of producer harm. And that is, in my opinion, the paramount goal of the PSC is to make sure that the producers are not harmed, because Nebraska and other states in Central America rely on agriculture, and they don't want grain elevator checks bouncing. So they did not have any incidents of any harm to any producer. And they changed policy, they revised contracts, they submitted an application, they had access to a line of credit, they were bonded in the state where the grain was delivered. They did numerous things to achieve compliance, and again, this was a first-time violation.
I saw all that, but in relation, as you read the PSC's order, in July, your client was on notice that they needed a license. By then, they had already had a dozen contracts. After expressly representing it wouldn't do business until it got licensed, it was doing business. How do you respond to that?
I think the testimony offered at the hearing was that Ms. Banghart jumped the gun, were the words that she used. And it's unfortunate that did take place, and my clients are not stating that they did nothing wrong. I mean, clearly by doing that, they were wrong. And I'm not here to tell this court that I think there should be no penalty. Clearly there should be some penalty, but I think it needs to be in line with other decisions. And I'd like to take just a couple seconds to talk about two primary examples that are set forth in my brief and in my reply brief. The 2018 Axtel decision, that was an unlicensed grain buyer that engaged in 25 transactions. Here it is 29. They completely failed to respond to the process. They didn't appear. They were in the middle of bankruptcy. They injured farmers and producers, and they were assessed a fine of $400 per transaction, and that resulted in a total of $10,000. And it appears from the reading, if you look at that opinion, it's very important, it appears from the reading that basically they weren't given that much of a fine because they couldn't pay it. And here, if the court looks at the financial documentation that was submitted by Banghart in transcript pages 256 to 261, it's clear that, without stating the numbers publicly, they were in good financial shape. My client can afford to pay the fine. And that's where we really have issue, is that the penalty that was assessed is 10 times higher, it appears, because they can pay it. That's the most egregious example. The Pipeline Foods is a 2021 case. That case had 22 violations. Again, they never even appeared. They ignored the proceedings. They did nothing, and they had a $22,000 fine. It shocks the conscience. It's not remotely related.
I understand your relativity argument. I want you to respond to this one, too. There's a significant component to this case, though, here also, where your client was told to address with the companies that they had done business with before getting a license and tell them about the status of their contract, and your client didn't want to do that. And they considered that as a part of the good faith efforts here. What's your response to that?
My response would be that I don't think there's any obligation under statute that requires them to do that. I also don't think there's any obligation under case law that requires them to do that. That is why I brought up the second issue, which talks about whether or not the contracts with the producers are void or voidable. And it's our position that they are voidable by the producer because of the unlicensed status. And again, I think our cases cited are on point, and I think the cases cited by Appalee are secondary sources and out-of-state cases that don't pertain.
You characterize the assignment of error, though, as telling them to rescind it. And I don't read the order that way. I read the order saying put them on notice. So whether they're void or voidable, at least those producers have rights. But they don't know that they have rights if your client won't put them on notice of it, right?
Well, it's number one, the filings in the PSC are public record. And number two, it's our position that when it relates to what they had to tell them, I don't know necessarily, you know, the difficulty is that the contracts had value, and I don't really know that the producers wanted to cancel them, and I think Banghart had a desire to fulfill the contracts, and again, I don't see the requirement under the law that they have to do that. No, it was not part of the order, but it was certainly in the original demand letter sent out by the PSC that they were supposed to and be encouraged to cancel the contracts. And I have argued that I think that's outside the authority of the PSC because that's an equitable remedy that kind of sounds in fraud. And I just think that's completely outside the power that should be granted to the PSC. I see I've exceeded my time. I would ask that this court vacate the order assessing civil penalty and remand this matter for further proceedings consistent with your written opinion. Thank you.
How far did we take him over?
3 minutes and 8 seconds.
Okay, just let's add 2 minutes to the appellee's time. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jay Bartel, Assistant Attorney General for Appalachia, the Public Service Commission. Banghart does not dispute it committed 29 separate violations of the Grain Dealer Act by acting as a grain dealer without a license. It also does not dispute that in each transaction it violated two additional separate requirements of the Act in the Public Service Commission's rules by failing to issue pre-numbered written documentation that included warning to seller language. The maximum civil penalty for each violation is $10,000. The PSC could have imposed a fine of $870,000 because there were 87 separate violations. It used its discretion and lowered that fine to $290,000 based on simply the unlicensed transactions.
Mr. Bartels, what is the PSC's authority to require an unlicensed dealer to notify people with whom they've entered into a contract that they are unlicensed?
I don't believe there's a statute or regulation that addresses that, but again, unlicensed activity is contrary to statute, contrary to the rules. So someone who is engaging in activity should be required to notify a producer that this contract is not lawful and that they have options and they don't have to accept the contract. They don't have to perform. And again, part of the issue is when we get into the Telluride case, okay, which really gets to the question of how do you look at the excessiveness of the penalty? In that case, you had a revocation of a designation of a carrier that had been approved by the commission to engage in certain activity. They found revocation was excessive, said a fine might be appropriate, sent it back to the commission. So in looking at the nature of the fine to be imposed, the court directed the commission to consider the gravity of the violation and the company's good faith efforts. to achieve compliance after being notified of the violation. So in reviewing the penalty here, I think it's appropriate to look at those Telluride considerations and compare what happened in Telluride versus what happened with Banghart. Telluride was lawfully designated as an ATC. They were licensed, if you will, and they had a single non-compliant event. Here, Banghart did business as a grain dealer without a license for an extended period of time, and they did engaged in numerous unlicensed transactions that violated the Act. The record shows Banghart contacted the PSC for the first time in July of 2021. It was informed by the department's grain manager that Banghart needed a license to operate in Nebraska. Ms. Banghart assured the grain warehouse manager that Banghart would not do any further business until it was licensed. Ms. Ritz, the grain department manager, followed that up with a letter in September of 2021, and shortly after that, Banghart filed an application on September 15th. On October 4 of that year, the PSC found Banghart had advertised in a Nebraska newspaper that it was purchasing grain. Ms. Ritz again contacted Ms. Banghart. She said it was a mistake and assured Ms. Ritz the company would not be doing business until it was licensed. Ms. Ritz then asked Banghart for copies of documents, contracts with producers, and other purchase documents, which the commission received in mid-October. That showed the transactions between September 16th and October 7th, which were cited in the PSC complaint and were found violations in the order. It also showed Banghart had been signing contracts as far back as February of 2021 and continued to do that for months before they ever contacted the Public Service Commission. Banghart even signed two contracts on November 4, 2021, which was after the PSC filed its complaint on October 21st. So Banghart's violations were repeated. They occurred even after it knew it needed a license and after it assured the commission that it would not engage in grain dealer activity without a license. That's not mere oversight and warranted the substantial penalty imposed under the Telluride standard requiring consideration of the gravity of the violation. As to the second consideration, Banghart's conduct is not consistent with good faith efforts to achieve compliance after being notified of the violations. Again, it was told in July it needed a license and promised it would make no purchases until it got a license. Filed an application in September that was incomplete, didn't have the financial statements required, and they didn't post the required security. Knowing it could not buy grain without a license, Banghart did so several times, even after the PSC filed its complaint. Again, that's not good faith compliance efforts by Banghart. It's only continued noncompliance. Now, it's true the fine is much larger than that imposed by the PSC and other grain dealer cases. But each case has to be judged on its own facts, so it really isn't that useful to look at what happened in these other cases. We don't have those orders actually in the record itself. Given the extent and nature of Banghart's conduct, we submit the court should defer to the PSC's discretion in imposing the fine.
Would you agree that Banghart did engage in some activities to mitigate, you know, enacting rules, putting the employee who put the notice in the paper on suspension, things of those nature?
Well, the record shows that they did some things. Of course, those were even after they were already on notice again that they shouldn't be doing it, and they continued to do it. So, and there's also some question, too, for example, with the employee who entered into the contract in November who was disciplined, Mr. Hardis. I think in Exhibit 13, you'll say that even after he was disciplined, he was still trying to get a producer who had a contract who wanted to cancel to keep that contract. I think that's part of Exhibit 13. I think it's on page 19. And so even Ms. Banghart had written a letter to Mr. Bogert trying to get him to say, hey, we want to talk about keeping your contract. They didn't have a license. They couldn't do that kind of thing. And they continued to do it. So again, sure, they did some things, but this is a continuing pattern of noncompliance, knowing they needed a license. They had applied for a license, but applying isn't the same as having a license. And so I think, again, the extent and nature of the conduct is severe enough to warrant a substantial penalty. Also,
is the financial condition of the appellant also a factor? As appellant argues that just because they were doing better financially, the fine was higher here?
There's nothing in the record, nothing in the order that would suggest that ability to pay was a factor, so I would not say that. The PSC didn't cite that. There's also the argument that the PSC had based its decision on the company's failure to unilaterally cancel contracts. Again, we've argued about whether they were void or voidable. I think we've cited the general rule that when a business is required to have a license, any contract, and it doesn't have one, any contract it enters into is void. Now, that distinction is not that important in the sense that both void or voidable, the innocent party or injured party can still compel performance. But the real question, it's really a non-issue, the notion of having to rescind or cancel, because PSC order doesn't fault Banghart for not canceling contracts. It faults them for not letting producers know, hey, we don't have a license, which means we don't have the protection afforded by the grain dealer security, and so we need to let you know that you have the option to avoid this agreement. And it was that failure by Banghart, not just not canceling the contracts, that the PSC cited in its order on pages 339 and 340 of the transcript. So taking it all together, I think the court should affirm the penalty. It is a significant amount of money, but again, given the conduct involved and the discretion the PSC has in imposing a penalty well within the statutory limits, the court should affirm.
Does it not matter that none of the people with whom they had contracted were harmed?
No, Your Honor, because again, the purpose of the Grain Dealer Act is the licensing is because you need to show that you're financially solvent and that there is a security posted to protect purchasers in the event of non-payment. Now, granted, we don't have any evidence that it happened here, but again, the whole point of having a license is to assure the public is protected. They didn't have a license and they acted without a license, so that's severe enough to impose a penalty. Actual loss is not required.
Anything further? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for being here. We will take the matter under advisement. You're excused, and we are adjourned.